Welcome to 105 The Tickets Video Game Podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Tom Schreier. We got a whole big group here. Finally, Max Hamilton, Henry Bell, Ben Humbert are all here. We got Kyle, who's just sitting in the lobby. I don't know what he's doing here, what he's doing. I'm kidding, Kyle.
And Tom's back with his fantastic transitions.
Yeah, no, yes. These are going to be awful because I'm going to have to think of a transition after like a huge conversation of all you guys fighting. So I'm going to keep the blood off the walls and we'll proceed. Starting with Witcher 3, obviously we'll get Heroes Beta, Call of Duty, GTA 5 mod, and then them suing BBC, and then the Xbox tuner and cutting the cable cord. But Witcher 3 is the biggest topic, I think, guys. It's a big game that came out, got a perfect 10 but from a couple of people, 9.75 from Game Informer. And at the same time, I'm getting text messages from you guys saying, it's just you two, right? Max and Henry that own it. So I'm getting text messages saying that the save games aren't working and stuff like that. I mean, where are you guys at with this game? Is it meeting expectations? Is the save a big deal?
I'd say there's a few areas to cover, but let's start with the pros. I mean, I'm about maybe 7 to 10 hours in. I think it's a really good, basically, evolution from the last game. It's open world now. The graphics took a little hit because it's such a bigger world. There's a lot more processes implemented, and it's very dynamic. The mission structure, I feel like it's really creative as far as the, when you think of other open world games like Skyrim, the missions, the side quests, it's all very generic. I'd say the writing and the acting, the voice acting especially in The Witcher 3, it's all top notch. There's a lot of twists and turns.
It's genuinely unbelievable. I mean, it's to the point where every single side quest in the game has probably 10 to 15 minutes of like dialogue, cutscenes, fully fleshed out stories, and there's always an interesting twist or some little facet added. Everything you do in that game is so well developed and interesting.
And it's all tied together, right? I mean, everything impacts everything, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we can't really say for sure. He's 10 hours in, I'm 20. I mean, it's not, we're not really far enough to have seen, influences beyond one or two steps removed. But,
okay.
But I would say yes. From what I've seen, I'm seeing characters, recur after quests. I don't want to give anything away, obviously, but major changes to the landscape after decisions are made, which can open up new quests, or if you don't make that change to the landscape, you never see that quest. I mean, unbelievable. The amount of content, too. I mean, I'm sure you found that daunting as well.
Right, and to add to that, just as far as the decisions, I mean, the smallest side quest can lead to a choice where you actually have to take some time and think about, what could the repercussions be? Because the writing is so good that, with the twists and everything, and you not seeing the results of your decisions until maybe another hour or two or even further into the game, there can be some pretty serious consequences. But as far as what did you just ask me? Holy crap.
Oh, I just asked if you agreed with me that all the quests are really well fleshed
out. Yes, that's what I was going to say.
There's so much going on.
The Witcher's
map,
it almost is, there's almost too much going on. There's a lot of the world to explore, and the map is just littered with, question marks and locations. And
you will be quick traveling
a
lot.
Yes, and monster nests to destroy and all sorts of areas to discover. And the exploration is fantastic. The only complaint I have is that some of the locations kind of feel cookie cutter and copy and pasted, mainly with the villages, the buildings, the interiors and stuff. It's hard to differentiate one from another when you're in the same, location or zone.
I was going to note on that. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to throw it out there. To be fair, that is almost inevitable in a sandbox game just because of the wealth of assets.
I had read an article on Forbes today just about their initial impressions of it. And if you think of Flotsam, and
Forbes' video game columns.
I will say
it's researched
it's
at best.
Up and coming and better. I think it's some good
getting
writing.
Better, but it's still.
I mean, everyone starts
double
somewhere.
Check it with Kotaku.
But anyways, if you think about like the forests outside Flotsam in the second game, and how just kind of dense it was in the graphics, and just everything felt very genuine and unique. And this is what the Forbes article was talking about. And I think it rings true because then in the third game, it just everything feels a little less, that unique touch to it or that love that was put into it.
I sort of see what you're saying. I think we'll have to really wait until we've played more of the game, though, because lest we forget, you and I have seen 1.25 of the total zones out of, I think there's 5 to 6.
Oh, there's
zones.
Quite a few, yeah.
So, and each zone is massive. I mean, massive. I'd say they are all hinterland sized if you played Dragon Age actually probably larger than that even.
It's bigger than Skyrim,
I think,
right?
Quite bigger.
Yeah,
it's a lot larger. Yeah, than although Skyrim. that's a tough comparison to make, only because that doesn't really as someone who's played through Skyrim probably like 10 times, I don't know, or I have never, and I don't know anyone who has ever actually like crossed the breadth that, you know, it's helpful beyond just like, oh, it's big.
Yeah.
We're talking so large, you must use your horse and quick travel to do anything. Like, it is huge.
Boy, I was just playing some Just Cause 2 earlier today and just thinking about the distances on some of those things.
Yeah.
And that was a limited map for being as open world as it was.
I would say, though, definitely think more in the scope of Just Cause 2 than the scope of Skyrim.
Okay. Because
stuff is much more spaced out as well.
Gotcha.
Right. And I would even hesitate to compare it to Dragon Age 3 because that was a very limited world. You couldn't get up and into whatever you wanted and
explore everything. I know everyone knows how large the hinterlands are.
Right, and it was large, yes. But I think, you know, you're even right in saying that bigger than that, it would be accurate. But so making the rounds today all over the internet is The Witcher 3 graphics. Everyone's complaining about the gameplay demo in 2013 and how it looked fantastic, and it's a downgrade. So are we going to have another, you know, Killzone lawsuit on our hands that it wasn't as pretty as it was supposed to be?
I mean, I think that it's important to remember that it's already kind of been addressed. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but as of today, the first PC graphical update patch has been released with another one promised next week, you were telling me.
Oh.
And a console one inbound as well.
Precisely. And that should make a big difference. And also, any console gamer complaining that it doesn't look as good as it did in the demo. No, but honestly, like the demos are always run off of a PC with the most modern hardware.
But also the demos.
You can't expect it to ever be the same.
And, you know, they came out and spoke on this, the developers, and they were saying that you have to keep in mind when they debuted this game 2 years ago, it was much smaller, it wasn't as vast, and they didn't have all the systems up and running, you know. It was a very small contained area, so that's why it was also able to look much better than it is now.
Yeah, but lest we forget, you know, they're paring it back for console, just like they did with Watch Dogs, just like they did with GTA 5, just like they have to develop it with a low end graphics settings in mind for, you know, Xbox One and PS4 users.
Well, final commentary about the graphics. I love how it looks, especially, you know, in the open wilderness areas, the sunsets, the dynamic lighting and all that.
Oh,
fantastic.
And the wind.
It's got some of the foliage looks kind of flat, and it's got kind of a pastel-y color look to it. Have you noticed that when, you know, daytime in the plants, like surrounded by plants and fields and things like that?
In the fields, I've definitely seen that in just some of the videos I've watched.
It's a little distracting, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, I have noticed it a little bit. I thought that was actually being caused by something else, though, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, because one thing that the only major problem that I've really encountered that's consistent is micro stuttering, where I'm running at a steady like 30 or 60 frames per second because I'm using the limiter for different testing.
Okay.
And the game is still producing tiny little screen tearing stutters about every half second or so.
Oh.
And the problem is, I had a buddy over who I was showing The Witcher 3 to, and he couldn't see it at all. So it's definitely something you have to have, like, the developed, you know, FPS eye, because there are people out there who cannot tell the difference between 30 and 60.
FPS eye, so how much did you pay to get one of those?
Well, I mean, can you
get them at Walmart?
But, point being, you know, it's not something that's necessarily completely detrimental because not everyone would notice it, but to me, that has much more of an effect than, like, I didn't really notice the flat pastels, but I noticed the stuttering, and that's what really pulled me out of it a little bit.
I agree. That is something that would throw you off if you did have that keen eye, like you're talking for it. It isn't something that you're going to notice when you're looking for other types of things in the game, but when you're looking at it fine-tuned like that, I suppose it would actually stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and speaking of, it also brings out my least favorite feature, which was also an issue in the new Dragon Age, which is the game is limited to 60 frames per second, theoretically, but the cutscenes are limited to 30. And that is really distracting. Like, it's noticeable.
Yep.
Like, you see the frame drop, and it's discomfort. I mean, sometimes I have to step away from the game for a couple of minutes just because my eyes start to hurt a little bit.
And when you first get into that game, there are a heck of a lot of cutscenes. I mean, it is wordy and lengthy to get into the meat of it.
Agreed. Although, to be clear, I love it. I mean, I just adore it. I just sit back and watch I do every single dialogue tree.
Yep.
I do every option I can. I adore the story.
Well,
the writing is great. The voice acting has improved immensely.
Much.
Still got Geralt, but, you know, whatever.
I was going to say that is a one testament to the game is that I, you know, when I play Oblivion or Fallout or what have you, I will just turn the subtitles on and skip through the dialogue. But in this game, I mean, I'm listening to every single conversation, like the story, yeah. It's all there. It's well done. Like you said, there's a lot of lore to get into. It's good stuff.
And you had mentioned how much you were enjoying the breadth of options earlier. And one thing I wanted to point out is they pulled one of my favorite features from Telltale, which is a lot of the decisions have a timer
yes.
bar. And you have the option of choosing A, B, or if you choose nothing and the timer runs out, a third option triggers, which I am always a fan of.
I did not know about the third option.
A very, very minor example that you guys don't have to worry about. You're given an opportunity very early in the game in the main quest to bow or not bow to a figure. And I completely panicked and bowed and then was mocked for it. So that I really like the actual like anxiety you get when you see that bar pop up and you're like, oh God, I was planning this playthrough out so well. I was going to be, you know, good in this case and bad in this case. And this does not fit into any of that.
Now they just made
a
fool
call.
Of me.
Right. Yeah. And then I'm going, well, I'm not going to unload like 2 hours of dialogue now just so I can go back and fix it. So they got me.
So with some of the reviews that are coming in, obviously it's gotten high praise for the most part. There is a total of 36 endings, I believe. And
wow.
It's not black and white. You know, your choices aren't necessarily, you know, going to be good or bad. It's kind of very difficult, I guess, to plan your way to that best ending. And I'm going to use the Game Informer example because I thought this stood out the best out of all of them. But the reviewer was talking about how, you know, there's this one point where you, and this is a mild spoiler for a small side quest, but you have to make the decision about whether or not to put a baby in an oven or not to lift a curse on a household, basically.
We've all been there.
And, right, yeah. I mean, you know, what would you do? And she said, you know, that first time she kept the baby out of the oven, but for review purposes.
I remember this review.
Yeah, had to go back and play it, you know, just so she had an idea of the consequences and stuff. And she kind of thought that, you know, the preferable better ending was if you cooked that baby up in that oven.
Awesome.
So, you know, there's a lot of thought. You can put all the thought in the world into some of your choices, but you're going to be surprised by their writing.
Yeah, I think I was reading. I always like to, while I'm waiting for these kinds of things to install, I'll read, like, the beginner's tips or whatever
sure.
on whatever site. And one of the tips that I read that I think is most true of this game is don't treat the dialogue like you're playing a video game. Treat it like you're talking to a person, because
right.
you'd be surprised what you can talk your way out of by appealing to what a real person, you know, the same things you'd appeal to in a real conversation. You know, you can appeal to their goodwill. You can bribe them. You can, you know, and you can read their personality through both the voice acting and through the excellent facial animations.
Do you find that number of endings to be kind of daunting, or just knowing that there's that much content and you have to devote that much time?
Frankly, I don't believe it. I think that a lot of people like to say there's 36 endings when what they really mean is that there are 4 endings with, you know, with multiple permutations.
The number
each.
You were looking for is 9.
The example being something like Fallout, where technically there's, I think, 3 big endings for like something like New Vegas, and then they give you just a 10-second cut of audio with over like a blank background or whatever, you know, over a picture that explains what happened based on minor decisions
sure.
you made.
Okay. Do you prefer your Mass Effect color-coded 3 endings and then...
No, I vastly, vastly prefer that one. Although, if I really could have a choice, I mean, lest we forget, I'd just go for the Chrono Trigger option, which is the best of both worlds. It is genuinely, you know, tons and tons and tons of completely distinct endings that don't need to play either of those games. Mm-hmm. They actually are concise, complete endings to each possible storyline.
I think, yeah, that's a nice way to wrap things up. If you're going to leave it open to that many possibilities, it should be clear-cut through each one of them. You shouldn't just have some type of faint feeling in the air that it could have been different.
Right.
It should be strict and straight through that.
Now, one thing that I wanted to mention, Tom, you were talking about how it's getting, you know, almost perfect reviews. It's getting
yeah.
mostly 9s and 10s. And I just want to express a little bit of concern about the fact that we're seeing increasingly almost perfect scores for games that are unplayable at launch.
I was going to ask about this, actually.
I mean, Battlefield 4 comes to mind, which I believe still has a 9.4 on PS3.
Yeah.
That game was unplayable for 6 months.
It's a while.
That's a long, long time. The scores need to be reflective of the product being sold, not of
the
hype and where money is being thrown.
Well,
no names.
The other thing, too, is that these scores came out before the game came out, right? About a week before?
Right, review score, which you could argue they didn't have the newest patching.
That's what I was going to say. They may not know that. And so that's what was surprising me. I alluded to this in the intro. You know, you guys were talking about, that's a save issue is a major thing, especially with how much dialogue's in the game, especially because it's about 250 hours, because you probably want to be in the location you think you're saved in, right? Because the locations are so far away. I mean, how do you remedy this? Do you think, because I feel like the reviewers, as soon as they can get their hands on it, are going to, you know, review it, well, especially because the competition is.
I think the best way to approach it is going to be allowing for the changing of scores as time goes on. I mean, earlier, you know, off mic, we were briefly talking about Destiny, and one of the things that came up was, we were talking about Titanfall, and one of the things that came up was that it has improved immensely since launch. The only problem is nobody's paying any attention to it anymore. And, I think that its scores should be going up if it's becoming a better game.
Like, the second review may become, you know, standard.
Well, some sites like IGN are starting to do like reviews in progress.
Unfortunately,
when they get games later,
sure,
they aren't giving you a full review right away. They give it like a week or two after to be able to play through the full single player and then grade it. So I know the Master Chief Collection took a bit of a hit because they gave it some time after it came out, but it was still broken. So then that gave it kind of a hit with its review score. So I think if more companies sort of did that review in progress route, I know it's hard for some companies. They need those hard deadlines, but the review in progress seems like a nice sort of compromise between getting a review out right away and making those adjustments.
Well, and unfortunately, that's not as much as I am supportive of that idea, it's not workable at the moment because of Metacritic. Because Metacritic only takes your first score, period. There have been several instances where people have asked to change scores and they cannot do it. And so because Metacritic is used for things like development bonuses and stuff like that, it's very important that we have the ability to change scores as time goes on. I mean, for God's sakes, World of Warcraft score should have changed somewhat over the last decade.
Oh, absolutely. Now, does Metacritic offer an explanation for why they don't let that lenience in? I mean, it doesn't make too much sense.
I think they've given a couple of kind of wishy-washy answers, but I think they don't have to.
Yeah, they don't have to.
They're concerned about, you know, possible gaming of the system through that and similar things, but frankly, I think that the potential issues can be worked around and that the gains from making that kind of a change would be huge.
Right, and there's ways to game any system. I mean, who knows who's doing what to it now as it stands, you know? I mean, look at other review sites. People are paid by employers to go out there and create positive reviews just to garner some attention and drive content, and that's all it takes.
Well, these games don't have to come out broken is the other thing. Like, you look at Nintendo, those games come out, they work just fine. You're not looking at day one patches or patches down the line. So
does Nintendo have the capability to do day one
patches? No, that's just the thing. It's like, for a company like Metacritic, they can take that hardline stance of you get your first score and that's it, because, you know, in theory, your game should be mostly done when it comes out.
In theory, maybe in 1990, but I mean, for God's sake,
most Rockstar games still are.
They've been heavily patching games for. Are you kidding me? GTA 5 came out broken
as heck. That was horrible.
Well, the online did, but I feel like online was.
I didn't have any problems in single player.
Yeah,
but,
that's what I was going to say.
PC had some single player issues even after all that delay.
And when you hear about launches, you know, you'll hear about all these glitches and stuff. Like when Unity launched, and everyone under the sun was having all these problems with it, and I didn't have any until I was actually halfway through my playthrough. So, I mean, experiences will vary, and, you know, you get what you get.
And lest we forget, you know, the more devices that get added, the more diversity of devices we have trying to play a game, the more impossible it is for them to have it all included right off the bat. When you're just programming for a Game Boy, it's a heck of a lot easier, or just a Wii U, it's a heck of a lot easier when you're not doing a PC version, an Xbox 360 version, an Xbox One version, a PS3, PS4.
And also, going back to the hype of things, Nintendo doesn't necessarily push all of their product in the way that PC, Xbox, and PlayStation have that type of year-round, type of hype going on.
That's why delays are good.
Let's not look to Nintendo as some sterling example.
No,
of game
they're absolutely not. No, but in that respect, I just think that kind of makes sense for why Nintendo has that system.
Well, I think it's mostly because it's kind of their thing.
Yes.
They have to have the game polished. It goes all the way back to the old Nintendo seal of quality, because back in the day, you didn't even know if a game was playable when you bought it.
Yep.
There were cartridges that the game just ends.
while we're still semi on the topic of the Metacritic scoring issue, one thing that they could consider looking at is I have been following Polygon since it launched, and sure. I think it's a pretty good up-and-coming game site. And they have started doing provisional reviews where they'll clearly say at the top of their article, and they can't do it with every single game, but you know, for things with online multiplayer content or you know not functioning fully at launch, they'll clearly say in a red bar at the top, like, provisional, and their score will actually change, and they'll update their reviewers as time goes on, because that's just, you know, the day and age we're in. But, you know, if Metacritic had some sort of thing where you had a time frame to change your score or some sort of provisional, you know, line of access to your initial review, I mean, that might be something that would be a little more accurate score-wise.
Real quick, how much have you guys played? You played 20, you played 10. How many hours have you played?
I have played 0 hours. I've only seen at least 4 hours of gameplay of it, but
yeah,
it looks phenomenal
on Twitch
for that.
Would you recommend still? I mean, you guys talked about
it. I would
when you
absolutely recommend this game.
Yeah. I won't get it tonight.
One thing I wanted to touch on. Well,
buy it on
actually,
your phone now.
For the record, I'm playing it on PC, and I really haven't had any issues that are game-breaking or weren't easily worked around. So okay. I would still recommend a PC purchase. The thing, though, I would like to make clear is that I think I mentioned this a little while ago on the podcast. I did not really play a ton of the first two Witcher games, almost none of the second one, and probably only about 20 hours of the first one. And this game is so much more accessible. It's so much more. You can drink potions in combat. Finally, like you can actually do stuff without having to be an expert strategist who plans everything out to an insane degree before battle. Which that was my least favorite thing about the Witcher game. So I think they've really done a lot to make this much more accessible to a bigger audience, which I'm totally okay with because I finally get to play a Witcher game that I really enjoy.
Yeah, saying over the text early, sorry to cut you off, but you know, I've only played just a little bit of Elder Scrolls Skyrim, getting into that stuff, and I can already tell that I'm going to want to buy The Witcher as soon as I get an Xbox One. I mean, it's up on the purchase list for me because it just looks and seems like it would be a really fun game to play out for more than 20 so hours.
And Max, any the save issues? I mean,
I mean, buyer beware right now, and I'm sure that an update's going to get out ASAP because this is a game-breaking glitch, actually. But mainly the consoles, definitely confirmed on Xbox One. There's been a bit of it on PS4 and a couple complaints on PC, but basically there's some corrupt save files going around where you'll be playing the game and you go to save your game, and it says that you cannot save right now. And normally you would think this is because you're in combat or in the middle of a quest or something, but you basically get to an open area then and fast travel different spots and notice autosave isn't working. You're not able to save over your old files or create new ones. And basically the stem of this, the common denominator, is that people are launching the game from standby mode on both Xbox and PlayStation 4, and it's either getting stuck at a loading screen and then they try to reload and their file's corrupted, or it just won't let them save over it and all this progress. I mean, I saw some accounts on the forums saying that people have lost 9 hours or more, and one, yes, go for it.
Oh, I just wanted to just make sure everyone knows, as far as PC goes, I haven't encountered the issue at all, and it's pretty easily worked around on PC by just using your quick save, so you have saves.
I thought you were going to say you should be saved more than once every 9 hours, but
you should be doing that as well. I don't want to just come down on people.
Kyle, but go for it.
I was going to ask, do you have any interest in it? I mean,
For me, it's too much game for me. This is probably the most game for your buck, single-player-wise, out there right now. Standard playthrough is said to be around 100 hours. Max playthrough is like 250 plus.
Yeah, I don't even know about 100 for a standard. I guess it depends on what you call a standard playthrough.
Like if you skip
much bare minimum. I think that's sticking to the main quest.
I finished the prologue zone over 20 hours into the game.
What?
There's a ton to explore. I mean, you start with access of a full area, and I mean, I didn't try this, but you could probably leave it if you wanted to.
You can literally just follow the main quest right out of it.
The leveling, though,
yes.
So you will...
Okay, yes. I wanted to touch on this, too. Yeah.
You will have a ton of side quests in your inventory, and it'll, you know, you start at level zero or whatever, and it's kind of like Borderlands, where if you encounter an enemy that you can't hurt, it's going to have like a red skull over its stats. Yeah, yeah. And it's just going to one-hit you. And basically the quests will say like recommended level 33, and you'll have this whole backlog of quests that you really can't touch until you get there, but it's still shown in your inventory.
Also, the leveling system itself is a little strange. you get minimal, if any, experience from killing enemies. It seems as though everything is mostly geared around quests and decision-making. But also, make sure you do everything in the prologue zone, guys. Seriously, I did some of it, and then I went on, I progressed in the main quest to the next zone, and the side quests were 5 to 10 levels above mine.
Yeah.
Like, you need to do all the side quests you can. They say it's optional. I'm not sure how it could be, since you can't just grind experience, but, you know.
Well, what did you think also about the way you develop your character? I mean, you have all these different skill trees and slots with multiple levels that you can upgrade, but then does it only work if you pick to put them in that active mutagen area?
No. What it is, well, so there's passive abilities that you can level up. For example, the one that I have the most points in is just a enhanced quick attack damage. I think I have 25% more damage and 25% higher chance for a crit or something like that.
Gotcha.
And essentially, you have to equip it to a slot. Even though it's a passive ability, you equip it to a slot, and then if at max level, there are 12 equipment slots, and then there are 4 mutagen slots tied to sets of 3.
Right, but so my question then is, if you have something leveled up to level 5,
sure.
If you don't have it in a slot, is it not active then?
Correct.
Okay, so that just seems of limiting.
I see. You know why it's not limiting, in my opinion? Well, a couple things. One, it's a loadout thing. It's a quick bar thing. Think of like an MMO. You have an action bar that has limited space on it. If you want to entirely change how you're doing things, the pause menu is available even in combat.
Sure.
So you can always rearrange it. But also, I think it's important they do it that way, because the way that the system works, like I said before, you have a mutagen slot, which is basically you can put an item that's a modifier for some kind of a build, like attack damage, sigil damage, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And they have a color, and abilities are also color coded. And when you use a mutagen and an ability that have matching colors, it increases the effect of them. So that's the real reason for the active slots, is so that you can have this intelligent planning.
I thought maybe it was just a multiplier for the things you've already upgraded and unlocked. Because to me, I mean, I understand that it's kind of that character building and that difficulty from the second game, but it's just kind of a turnoff that you invest so much time into leveling up your character and you don't level up fast, and you use those skill points, and then, you know, you can only have so many abilities active at once, I guess.
I suppose, although, I mean, honestly, you don't really notice most of the abilities anyways. It's not like you're getting some heroic attack or something like that. You're getting a passive buff to your quick attacks. So it's, I mean, in terms of...
Right, but I mean, some of the general stuff, there's definitely some...
Well, and I think that's a balance issue, and that's what it comes down to. Is there's probably about, I think, 10 or 12 one-point abilities.
10, I think, yeah.
And they have kind of Fallout trait type effects. So it'll be like there's one that's you regenerate health during the day and stamina at night, just passively. And so they have to limit those in particular, I would think, because otherwise you'd just be
a super powered character.
Yeah, like you end up being in all the Fallout games, which I don't get me wrong, that's a whole different fantasy I enjoy.
And again, yeah, it's kind of set specifically for some group of
people. And I think they're trying to complicate things because that's kind of The Witcher.
The Witcher is supposed to be more strategic than just Skyrim.
See, it is. There's a lot to combat. But combat is also much more fluid, and I mean, let's talk about the difficulty, because there's 4 levels. First level is story mode, so you just play through the game without having to worry about dying too much. First one is very easy, and I thought the second one was hard at first, but now I'm starting to breeze through it, and I'm tempted to even upgrade to the final one, because you can almost go into a fray unprepared and come out unscathed in some of these encounters.
Were there only 3 options for difficulty for you?
Yeah.
I think there were 5 on PC, unless I'm...
I thought it was 4, but this is kind of funny that we don't know.
I think it was 4 or 5. I'm sure it was more than 3. But anyways, not really important. I'm on the Broken Blood and Bones or whatever one.
Okay.
I think it's the second to the hardest.
Yep.
I started on the one that was supposed to be just normal mode or whatever, but it was ridiculously easy. Like, I was literally just spamming the quick attack button and killing everything.
I guess my only point is that when I was playing the second Witcher, it felt like every single swing and hit had some impact to it, and it mattered. Like, if you missed and you didn't counter or block properly, like, you were screwed.
Yeah, I agree, although I think that it was more dependent on your preparation for the battle than the actual
way
you fought. I'm not looking for Dark Souls in my open world game. I, especially one that has save issues. I'm
that is fair.
So Witcher 2, quick anecdote. I didn't even make it through the tutorial without dying. You have to do the combat, and it was the advanced tutorial in the arena that they added later on, but they patched it in because the original was not good enough. But it's so difficult and requires that you're reading everything exactly and following all of their little rules. That's what turned me off. And I love massive sprawling RPGs. Like, you guys know this. And so I was shocked. I told you guys a couple weeks ago how much I wanted to like the Witcher series. And that's why I was so excited about this one, because it is more accessible. So I think I'm okay with not every single attack needing to connect, especially since you're often fighting groups of 10-plus enemies.
Well, not only that, but if you have 250 hours of content and all that dialogue, part of the game is, obviously you want some challenge, but part of the game is seeing the story, right? And not being so stuck that you come back to the game, you know, like a few months later, right, and you don't understand what's happening.
Well, and the difficulty is still there. You must read your bestiary if you want to be able to kill a lot of the monsters. I mean, don't try and tell me that you just got lucky and killed the first Noon Wraith without any problems.
No, actually, the first problem I had, did you come by that church with like the sigil stone or whatever? And
the place of power?
Yeah, the place of power. Yeah. So there are places of power scattered about, and you can drain them to get an ability point instead of having to level up, which
and
is
a
nice.
Temporary buff.
That's nice.
That too. And there was just this overpowered wraith that popped out of nowhere. I was like, I can take it. You can't.
One thing I wanted to add, just so everyone understands, the skull enemies are not necessarily going to one-shot you. I've killed many skull-headed enemies. That's when you have to play it like Dark Souls.
So you are better than me, then.
Well, no, you have to play it like Dark Souls, and so you have to shift your strategy entirely. You have to dodge as many attacks as you can, but all it really means is they are more than, I think, 10 levels above you. But they are, if there's just a single one, like I was able to kill a skull-headed wraith by just wailing on him for, 10 minutes.
Right. And if you want to invest the time to dodge and roll and counter, you can certainly do it, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, it's not really worth it since combat doesn't give any experience. Does it give experience? Can you confirm or deny? As far as I can tell, it doesn't give any.
I can confirm you get a tiny amount. You'll see some numbers pop up. But yeah, I mean, it's the way to do it is those side quests.
Okay. Yeah,
and even one frustrating thing is you'll obviously the side quests, you get the bulk of the experience at the end of it. But as you beat smaller segments of it, like for example, there's one where you had to go around and burn some soldier mass graves to clear up battlefields, and every time I'd burn one, it would give me some experience and the number would pop. It's like 9 experience, you completed part one of, you know. And it's like 9 experience, you know, you're investing this much time and you know.
Although it kind of reminds me a little bit of what was the game? It's like the new Final Fantasy, where like literally anything you do gives you experience.
Type Zero, or
is it the 14 or the? It's the new MMO remake.
Oh, 15, Reborn or whatever it's called.
I don't know. I haven't played Final Fantasy since 10, but the remake is great, and one of the features of it is that it's you can basically level in any possible skill. Anything you do gives you experience in that relevant skill, and I like that they're still giving experience for something like burning a corpse, because frankly, that would not increase your world, your knowledge of the world, and make you a better fighter. Like, I mean, let's be honest.
Well, any parting thoughts, questions, comments for the Witcher Trace?
It's great. Buy it.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Get out there.
So do you think I should just wait until they patch that same thing
you're
or just
fine.
Go get it?
Just for those of you running into trouble on the console or those that wish to avoid it, until there's a patch out,
play responsibly.
Right. Don't play from standby mode. Set your Xbox either in power saver mode or fully power it off when you are done.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And also, you know, make sure you're saving regularly.
Yeah, that's the most important.
I know it's 2015.
Once every 9 hours.
Right, but get it in there.
Not just frequently, multiple save files. Because
you know,
if it gets corrupted,
that's what
it doesn't
I do
matter
everything,
how
though.
Frequently you save.
Have three or four or more save files and just rotate them. I know The Witcher puts the newest save at the top, so, you know, automatically go to the bottom of your list when you save and just save over that file. But one other thing is, when you're done with the game, don't just, you know, hit the home button and go to your dashboard. If you're on Xbox, I'm not sure how it works totally on PS4. But when you're at that main screen, highlight it, press the menu button and actually hard quit from the game, because otherwise it's still active and loaded in your Xbox One's dashboard.
And I can see that becoming an issue with so many games, right, especially because it's just like a standard feature. No one like realizes how much of that is actually powered up the whole time it's sitting there on your home screen.
Right, and it's a lot more than people think.
Yes.
I'd literally go through and make sure everything's quitted out before I shut the whole thing down. Yep.
There should be a feature for that on Xbox, right?
No, there is. You hit the menu button and quit.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just saying a standard option on there. You know what I mean? Option, everything powers down, no standby.
Oh, well,
you either have to do the full off, which shuts everything down. Otherwise, for people like me, I have a Kinect. I don't use it for anything other than voice commands. You can't turn on your Xbox with your voice if you have it fully shut down. You can't have downloads going in the background if you don't if you fully shut it down. So DLC stuff, DLC stuff and add-ons automatically downloads overnight. Don't even have to worry about it. You just load it up the next day and you're good to go. So there are advantages and disadvantages of both. You just have to, if you do always on, you need to make sure that you quit out everything.
Yeah. And if you do quit out of everything, you need to prepare when you boot up The Witcher next, especially in these first couple weeks, to not be playing for a couple hours while it downloads all the patches.
Yeah.
So, because if your Xbox is off, you're not getting the patch data.
Take a break, stretch your legs, refill the bowl of Cheetos.
Play a different game.
Right. Or exactly. Yeah. Put something else on.
Blasphemy, Tom.
Can you confirm, though, if they shut it completely down, can they turn it back on without the game auto-launching? Because then could they maybe update it without having to have the game running in the background, quote-unquote?
It sounds like, I can't confirm, but it did sound like from on the boards that when any patch does come out, you know, if you are trying to stay active in the game to avoid losing all that progress, you got to quit out and reboot actively from the main menu or from the dashboard. So you're losing that progress one way or another if it's not working.